Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of May, 2021. Welcome. Episode 72 of this podcast series, aka Work From Home Journal, number 15. Although my semester has ended, so I'd be working from home for the summer anyway. So really, it's no big deal. Stay calm, Professor. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we did one of these episodes, which should make this more or less, pretty much, kinda, all the comic books I read during May. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts are not exactly spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists. And here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. On the April episode, we heard from faithful feedbacker Dr. Ange from the blog Comic Box Commentary. Sounds like a very good month overall. Good times and hooray vaccines. A few things stood out to me. I've read countless takes on Farfeard and the Gray Mauser. At some point, I should read the actual stories. I'm pretty sure that comics legends Howard Chaykin and Walt Simonson cut their teeth on books like this, Sword and Sorcery. In fact, I think Chaykin is on the art in this issue. You can see why DC would allow him to do Iron Wolf soon thereafter. I also really liked the Scarlet Witch series. The art choices and changes really worked well given the world tour feel of the title. Why not find an artist whose style works with that locale, with that story? Still trying to wrap my head around the Mr. Oz story. I don't think I need Superman's father to have feet of clay, but Dan Jurgens is magic, as you say. Superman 247, Does the World Need a Superman?, has been reprinted a jabillion times. Funny how the Guardians worry is basically Lex Luthor's MO for the last 30 years or so. Lex thinks Superman is holding humanity back. Funny how it was good guys here, although the Guardians can be just as totalitarian in idea as some villains. Lastly, I'm glad you like that Human Target. The idea of loss of identity is key for the whole series, and it's important to know the series was born out of a very successful Vertigo Human Target miniseries, also written by Milligan. I recommend the whole kit and caboodle. Well, thank you, Doctor. I am putting that Human Target series on the list. And podcasting's Michael Bailey had some thoughts on one of the issues I covered. Hint, it involved Superman. It's that same issue that Dr. Ann's mentioned, as a matter of fact. Professor, Superman 247 is one of the greatest Superman stories ever told. That's not just my opinion. That's where I read the story for the first time. So there's a precedent for it being called that. Anyway, I like Must There Be Superman, both in terms of art and writing. And I will never not be amused that a conversation teenaged Jeff Loeb had with Elliot S. Mangan was the inspiration for the tale. The thing that will always make me give the story the side eye is that the people telling Superman he might be a social drag are the Guardians of the Universe. The Guardians that created the Green Lantern Corps and decided they knew best when it came to law enforcement. Seems a little dubious. Great episode as always. Podcasting's Michael Bailey. And Sir Martin thanked me, first of all, for allowing him to repost what he characterizes as, quote, one of the best DC covers of all time, end quote, referring to World's Finest 284, a cover full of composite Superman goodness. He also called it another smashing show. It does indeed sound like a darn good month. Did I not tell you and everyone that the Scarlet Witch series was wonderful? As Ange says, what an amazing bunch of artists. And the red and white theme covers were spectacular. I rarely buy a trade of something I have on digital, but I had to have this collection for my shelf. Highlights included the return of Agatha Harkness, the Ireland set issue starring the Emerald Warlock, and a visit to one of my favorite places, Santorini. Best of all, writer James Robinson rescued Wanda from the horrors inflicted on her character by previous Marvel writers. Agreed on all counts there, Mart. That World's Finest Composite Superman story has one of the best DC covers ever. And the second issue, 282, just beautiful work from Keith Giffen and Larry Malstead. I've never read an Alterna comic, he admits, but that Tinseltown does sound fun. A million years ago, I pitched a series to a UK girls comic about a plucky child star. I'm not surprised it was rejected, given I didn't really have much beyond the title Hooray for Hollywood, which I still think is great. Thank you, Sir Mart. Yes, a great title. There's something appealing to me about that era, just before the Great War, the early days of Hollywood. So, yes, I've thoroughly enjoyed the original Tinseltown series and this current one as well. And Billy D, co-host, along with Herman of the All-Star Squadron podcast, A World on Fire, and the solo show Magazines and Monsters, he wrote in to say, Prof, thanks for the mention of A World on Fire, Herman and I are having a great time with this project. By the time you read this on the air, we'll have an even bigger project up and running. Enjoyed the show as always. Thanks for keeping me company on my morning commute. I always look forward to seeing an episode download. Well, thank you, Billy. And you keep up the good work, too. Social media support for that last episode came from Clinton, from Coffee and Comics, Pat Sampson, Derek William Crabb, that fanhole, Chris Lydon, Vic in Phoenix, James Williams, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Brian Mulvey, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Mike from Comics in the Golden Age, Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics, and our reigning Listeners of the Year, the Sutherlands, from the Rad Adventures Network. And now, on to the books I read last month. And as I do on this show, I'm categorizing the books that I read. And first are the issues I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. For Quarterbin 168, I read The Cases of Sherlock Holmes 14. And as a bonus, I read Cases of Sherlock Holmes number 11 as well. This is the Renegade Press series. And if you like the illustrated story format of comics, which I know may not count as comics to some sticklers, but I do certainly recommend those issues. And for issue 169, I read an issue from Atlas Seaboard from the mid-1970s, Police Action number 2. And for the May issue of Doomspeak, we revisited the coming excellence of the end of this century as we read Doom 2099, 17 and 18. And for the June episode, I read Iron Man 149 and 150, an absolute classic tale. I do have a bunch of Quarterbin-related issues to cover here. I did two issues on the Impact line of comics. But over the years, I'd accumulated a bunch of other books from the Impact line and also books featuring other versions of those MLJ characters. So the oldest of these, from the mid-1960s, I got from the generous Canadian Sir Rob Lance, Adventures of the Fly, 29 and 36. All six of these stories were written by a guy from Cleveland who made a name for himself a few decades before, along with his buddy Joe Shuster. That's right. These were all Jerry Siegel penned stories, and most of them reflected his standard silliness and simplicity, which I'd say worked pretty well for a hero published through Archie, actually. Not much depth, not much backstory, not much all that dramatic, but fine enough as comics. And then jumping into the mid-1980s, also from Sir Rob, but also Kirk Spencer and the folks at Crazy Comics, I read The Black Hood, number one, The Fly, 4 and 5, and the original Shield, number one. The Black Hood issue in particular, but all of these really, were definitely more modern in their storytelling, more grown up from the 1960s versions of those characters. Less kiddified. Had gunfire, kidnappings, real peril for the lead characters. Really no attempt to dumb down the stories for a younger audience. And The Black Hood had Kerry Burkett and Graham Morrow on it with an Alex Toth cover. So it had quality creators. And this version of The Fly had Steve Ditko drawing the lead feature. And that was sublime. I mean, it's Ditko on a lithe, gymnastic, insect-themed hero. So count me in on that. The Jaguar backups in that one, a Mexico-based origin story, was also strong. None of these were what I expected. All that lead characters dealing with adult issues like jobs and grown-up relationships and stuff like that. So very intriguing. And then a bunch more from Impact. That was 91 and 92 against Sir Rob. Contributed a number of these, as did various cheap bins around Central Ohio. All in all, I read The Comet, 3 and 7. Legend of the Shield, 1, 6, and Annual 1. Jaguar, 14. The Fly, 2 and 3. And The Web, 1, 10 and 11. The Comet story, those were solid enough. That was a title I liked back on the Quarterbin episode. Although now after Sir Martin's costume commentary, I really can't see past the Comet's squooshed helmet. Issue 3 had a very fun letters page because it was too soon to have letters from readers, so they published quote-unquote letters from every person on the creative and editorial team, everyone complaining that Mark Waid was falling behind on the scripting. Very, very funny. The Fly also has an interesting look, very big bug eyes. But the look, to be honest, was probably my favorite part of those issues. He's a high school kid, he's a hero, learning his way. He's excited to be a hero. All of that can work. But the reason we know that that can work is because we've seen it a jabillion times. So not great, but definitely solid enough professional comic work. Now, this Jaguar issue that I read, it was much better than the annual that I covered before. I like the South American or Central American heritage of the character. That is one of the things that makes her stand out from among all the other lady cat, cat lady characters. This one that I read was the final issue of the title. And they did a nice job wrapping up the story and then talking about the cancellation in the letters page. And as we all know, sometimes a title doesn't get that chance. Legend of the Shield, this one, just not working for me. Patriotic-themed character, flag-waving character. It's not easy to do right. There's a needle that has to be threaded, at least for my enjoyment, and this one didn't quite manage that. But specifically, I want to talk about the Legend of the Shield annual, because it was part of the crossover that I covered on an episode of the Quarterbin. And my complaint there was that the crossover, this event, EarthQuest, I think it was called, it just wasn't an event. there didn't seem to be any connection to the other stories, to the other issues. That's what I found in the prior one, Jaguar Annual, and that's exactly what I got here. You know, maybe it's a little better story than the Jaguar, but then again, there was no sense of continuing story of an actual event. What is EarthQuest? I've read two of the five parts, and I just don't know. And again, the backup feature of the Black Hood through history, that was again my favorite bit. The web, conceptually, there's something there. The shadowy organization, the team, the technology, it could work. I mean, the concept works in other settings. S.H.I.E.L.D., most notably. But this brings me to four issues total of this run of the web in the Impact version that I've read, and they're all just kind of boring. Then, jumping up to 2009, another DC imprint, The Red Circle. I read the one-shot The S.H.I.E.L.D., written by J. Michael Straczynski. There are limitations, again, like I said, on what you can do with a flag-based character, patriotic character. But this version, although quite similar to some versions, some takes on Cap, is actually pretty good. And then the most recent books that I read from 2015, back at Archie under the Dark Circle imprint, we get the Black Hood 1 through 11, which is the storylines The Bullet's Kiss and The Lonely Crusade by Dwayne Swierczynski and Michael Gatos. And because I occasionally have made the pronunciation mistake of Swierczynski and Straczynski, I'm just going to call this writer Dwayne. And Dwayne killed it on this story. This was adult. This was intense. It was the story of a cop who takes down the vigilante, the Black Hood, only to end up taking up the mantle himself. But he is badly injured in that heroic moment, and eventually gets hooked on the painkillers, and it gets rough from there. He has a few friends, including a potential girlfriend, but he struggles to put them ahead of his own guilt and his own addiction. And in the last issue of the first trade, we do see him in a recovery program, but he's not doing great, and he's lying to the potential girlfriend. And then the second trade, the next storyline, puts his life even more at risk, and his secret at risk, and this potential girlfriend at risk. It's definitely intense, and it's also really good. It's not completely delivered in the same blunt, artistic style of a hard case crime story, but it's the type of story you might find there. And there are some very bad words in here. For a book related to Archie, it's pretty out there. And again, it's quite good. Like I said, although the art is not as intense as the story sometimes can be, Michael Gatos does an excellent job giving us a moody environment and portraying the intense action of the stories that Dwayne has written. Very, very strong. And then another Dark Circle book that I read, The S.H.I.E.L.D. 1 through 4. This is the story of the spirit of the S.H.I.E.L.D. as it manifests in a woman throughout history. She heroes, she dies, she reincarnates, repeat, rinse, repeat. In the current day, she's a little hazy on all of those past deeds. But fortunately, there's a secret society that's going to set her straight. Unfortunately, there's a second secret society who also wants to set her straight, although they have a different version of setting her straight. Who will win? Who will lose? And will the truth come out? It's a good setup, good character, good story. One of my favorite versions of the S.H.I.E.L.D. that I ran across. By the way, a lot of these Impact books and the later Dark Circle books are available via the Hoopla digital app, which means that if your local public library is part of the Hoopla Consortium, you can get access to digital versions of those books. One more podcast-related issue that I read after I read the Atlas book, Police Action Number 2, I dug through my stacks and found another Atlas book, Wolf the Barbarian, sent to me by former podcaster and still nice guy, Mike Peacock. There wasn't anything revolutionary about this book. You know, in the genre of barbarian comics, Wolf, he's somewhere in the middle of the list. It was solid. It was good, but it was nothing special. Which brings us to comics I read to listen along with podcasts, because there are getting to be a good number of DC-related comics whose books are on the DC app. And I love following along with comic book podcasts. So to listen to the unnumbered episodes 252 and 253 of From Crisis to Crisis, co-hosted by Podcasting's Michael Bailey, I read Action Comics 723, Adventures of Superman 537, Superman 114, Superman the Man of Steel 58. And in these, a not very good Brainiac story wrapped up. And a listen to episode 50 of the Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace podcast, which was also the 5-year anniversary episode. Congratulations, Angela. I went very old school and read Sensation Comics 33 from way back in the day. In addition to containing a decent Wonder Woman story, it was a pretty good Wildcat story and an okay Mr. Terrific story, among a few others. And a listen along with Shag on an episode of the Justice League Wahaha podcast, or as Stella would call it, the Justice League Blah 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 podcast. I read Justice League America 38. And a listen along with episodes 97 and 98 of the Legion Clubhouse. I read Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes 249 to 252, a storyline in which Brainiac 5 goes just a little bit power mad. And I wrapped up the end of Jim Starlin's run by reading Batman 430 to follow along with episode 48 of The Overlooked Dark Knight. And we mentioned the podcast A World on Fire recently, and to listen along with episodes 9 and 10, I read All-Star Squadron 12 and 13 and The First Annual. This has been a title I have very much enjoyed revisiting. And for listening along with Tim Price, the Podcrasher, on his new Outcaster show that he does with Ashford and Sarah, episode 9, I read Batman and the Outsiders, number 9, a very colorful and fun late Bronze Age story, and an entertaining Halo backup. And to follow along with an old episode of the Fan Holes from a few years back, I read Detective Comics 597 and 647. So moving on to new comics that we read right off the shelves, we do indeed sort of have one, although it's not really a comic, and it was free, but still, I'm counting it. The Hellfire Gala Official Guide. I'm keeping up with the goings-on in the X-verse via Chris's X-Lapsed podcast. But this was the first time I was able to see the current versions of many of the characters he's talked about. So that was worth it. And of course, it was free, so that certainly made it worth it. It was well worth the price of free. And then the general comic reading that I did, my friend Clinton from Coffee and Comics and Fan Film Fridays sent me a care package recently, which included Ghost Rider Captain America Fear, a square-bound prestige format one-shot from 1992 by Howard Mackey and Lee Weeks. A number of folk on Twitter commented that they really like this comic when I posted a picture of what Clinton sent me. And they were right. It's good. You wouldn't necessarily think of Ghost Rider and Cap existing in the same story, that the same type of comic book. But this does bring them together in a way that makes sense to take on and take down the villain Scarecrow. Solid, solid story. Manuel Carmona sent a package earlier in the year that included DC Universe Zero from 2008, the bridge book from Countdown to Final Crisis to Final Crisis. It's basically Grant Morrison and Geoff Johns are running around the DCU of the era. Not really a fan of the DCU of that era, but for what this was, it more or less worked. Got a very nice care package recently from Dr. Ange, which had a good range of issues, including House of Yang number 1 from Charlton from 1975. Back in the era when Asian culture and martial arts were on the rise, Charlton decided to dig back into that genre with this book after earlier successes with Judo Master and Yang. This one takes place in China and hits most of the tropes, for better or worse, but it was an action-packed adventure. I have to give it that. Sir Luke Giaconetti sent me in some comics a little while back, including, another Cap story, The Adventures of Captain America, number 1, Sentinel of Liberty, another square-bound book. This was a 4-issue mini. This was mostly the origin, and my main thought was, wow, a lot of this ended up in the first Avenger movie. Kirk Spencer, a.k.a. Big Five Army, sent some comics in recently, including a few from various Kickstarters that he supported over the years, such as Dirty Work at the Crossroads from Josh Metzger and Carlos Nieto from this year. It takes place in a sci-fi setting, but is a military type of story, a tale of rebellion and prison breaks and traps and counter-traps. Being issue 3, I didn't know the characters as well as I could have, but it was, as the saying goes, a ripping good yarn. But back in March, when I got my first COVID shot scheduled, in a town about an hour away, I asked M to give me a drive, and they're a good kid, and so they agreed. Now, fortunately, on the way back, we just happened to swing by the used book and record store and comic store where my university campus is located, Pulp Reality, and we found some decent stuff there, such as Captain Freedom, number 5 from 1983, an all-color extravaganza from AmeriComics, or AC, who I've read a decent amount from in the last few months. This one was okay. I didn't really get the green and yellow and red costume, to be honest. That usually doesn't bother me, but here, for some reason, it did. That may have also been because the story itself was pretty generic, but I have not given up on AC yet. I'm still going to grab their books when I find them cheap. From the Amalgam line, I read Iron Lantern. And as the Amalgam books go, I'd put this one in the top half. It mixed Hal and Tony pretty well. And the Madam Web Star Sapphire combo also worked. Kurt Busiek wrote it, which certainly helped in terms of plotting the way this one-off story would work. The Amalgam that worked least well for me was in the final page teaser, Mandarinestro. But that was only one panel, so no big deal. The rest was solid enough. And a book definitely from my past, Mad Magazine 190 from April 1977, for the exact cover price, which proclaimed it as being 50 cents. Cheap. I mean, how could I resist? Some great bits in there, including roasts of ordinary people instead of celebrities, and a pretty good parody of the TV show One Day at a Time. Hello, Valerie Bertinelli. And if any listeners have ever met Mrs. Quarterbin, you know I have sort of a weakness for Valerie's. Fantastic Four Annual, number 19, No. There is no Doom, so I knew I was taking a risk. So why did I buy it? It did have She-Hulk. That was pretty much my excuse. This one involved the Skrulls, with the Avengers showing up again in a completely okay story. Dagar the Invincible. 5-17 from Gold Key, standard fantasy stuff with swords and sandals, witches and wizards, dinosaurs and dragons. The stories don't always make the most sense, or any sense, but they are almost always pretty fun reads. And from somewhere along the line, I read Vampironica number 1, wherein Veronica Lodge becomes, that's right, a vampire. I have not read any of this title before this one, but you know, October is right around the corner. And sort of related, at least in inspiration, I read Vampirella number 3, given to me by Kirk Spencer. This is from the 2019 Dynamite Run. It was written by Christopher Priest. We get some conflict between Vampy and her mom, and that relationship is a bit strained. Throw on top of that the standard battling of all sorts of evil, and you get a pretty solid issue, truth be told. And from World's Greatest Comics, Black Friday, and various other sales, read Avengers X-Men Axis number 1. Here's the thing. I had no interest in the event, but it was a slightly oversized issue, and the version I had a Scotty Young Doctor Doom cover on it. So of course it was worth a dime. And some kid books that I read mostly from Sir Rob's Care Package and also some from Pulp Reality or Kirk Spencer. I read Richie Rich Money World, number 4, Archie Double Digest, 286 and 299, World of Archie, 8, World of Archie Double Digest, 108, Sad, Sad Sack World, number 3, Betty and Veronica, 192, 196, and 197, and The Beagle Boys, 35. One of the Betty and Veronica issues had the statement of ownership in circulation, and in 1972, Archie's gals were printing over 700,000 copies per issue and selling nearly 500,000 of those. Crazy, crazy big numbers. And the Beagle Boys book was interesting. Yes, they did run across Scrooge and the Ducks on occasion, but the writers actually did a good job of making them the stars, albeit the hapless stars of these stories. And on a related note, I started watching the recent DuckTales show on Disney Plus. Love David Tennant as Scrooge McDuck. I think it's important that we have such a skilled and beloved actor playing a role like Scrooge, you know, someone who delivers and embodies such important and inspirational personal finance messages. All right, time to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read during May.
Adolescents this generation have no respect and are a far cry from my sweet Jane Eyre and her friend Helen Burns. Why, just this afternoon I was walking
Stella.
Across, and you know what? Men too. Well,
Stella?
Serious men like the tragic Mr. Rochester and teachers, pa! They're all like the villainous Mr. Brocklehurst.
Hey, Stella!
Yes, Thomas?
As much as I enjoy indulging your insanity, we have a promo to record.
Oh dear, and what might that be?
That is you and I telling everyone that we have a brand new podcast out there. It's called Required Reading with Tom and Stella. Once a month, we will take a look at a single work of literature, discuss it, analyze it, and determine if it's worth its place in the canon.
Oh dear, that sounds delightful.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. And you can find us on the Two True Freaks Network, which is at twotruefreaks.com.
Oh yes, Required Reading with Tom and... Why is it Tom and Stella? Why can't it be Stella and Tom?
It rolls off the tongue better?
Okay.
Well, that was easy. So, required reading with Tom and Stella at 2TrueFreaks.com. Thanks for contributing to the promo there. You did a great job.
Oh, you are so welcome.
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read during May. A few years ago, I picked up some Marvel UK books, some miniseries from the 1990s, back when World's Greatest was having one of those dime sales that I mentioned before. And I read some of these over the last few years, and I ran across some more in the stack. I think this may be the last of that batch. This was Kill Power, the early years, 1-4. This one had some overlap with the greater Marvel U, with Rama Tut as the main adversary. Time travel shenanigans also brought in the Punisher, because 1993. The main character, Kill Power, is a super strong guy with the mind of like an 8-year-old. Now, I generally don't like big, dumb characters, mostly because I don't think they're often written realistically dumb. Or even characters like this, kids in adult bodies. But the kid part of Kill Power's mind, his attitude, that actually worked reasonably well for me. But the story itself is 1990s levels of wild and crazy, and yes, extreme. But even with that, it wasn't that bad a read, to be honest. And from World's Greatest Comics, Black Friday, and various other sales, books that cost me 10 cents each. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, 36, 37, 39 through 43, and annual 6 and 7. A decent bunch of stories. You know, I kind of like this era, 1979, 1980. Peter is working at ESU as a grad assistant. That was a cool setting for early adult stories. Maybe I'm biased, I admit that, but I think the university is a very good setting for adventure. Although I am distressed by the number of professors there engaged in, let's say, shaky research projects. You know, maybe comic books would be more popular, would sell better, if instead of focusing on professors doing research on lizards and meteors, they did stories about professors who look at, I'm just spitballing here just off the top of my head, whether the investor learning hypothesis explains the recent diminishing returns in the Dogs of the Dow investment strategy. I mean, just hypothetically, okay? Now, the two annuals jump more into the middle of the 80s, and annual 6 is the Peter and MJ honeymoon issues with a guest appearance by the Puma. I mean, not during the honeymoon, not while they were. I mean, Puma had a job for Peter, but that didn't turn out so well for everyone involved. But the couple of times I read a story with the Puma, call me crazy, I kind of liked him. Not the greatest batch of stories I've ever read, but did I mention they were a dime apiece? So that made them very fun, worthwhile books to read. Now, I'm not going to tell you who sent me these next issues, but just see if you can guess. From Slave Labor, I read Caffeine 3-5. Come on, guess who sent this to me? No, not Stella. Right, Clinton from Coffee and Comics. This was a very strange black and white series featuring the very most strangest party of all time. From the combination of World's Greatest Comics and the Hoopla app, I read the Dynamite Comics miniseries, The Lone Ranger, The Devil's Rope, 1-5. This was written by Mark Russell, who's done some interesting and thoughtful work over the years. Here, you've got some ranchers in Texas who want to use the lawlessness of the era and the area to expand their properties at the risk of annoying what little law enforcement there is, and also the native peoples of that area. But one of those law enforcers is the Lone Ranger, and one of the natives is Tonto, and so things turn out not to the advantage of those ranchers. I wasn't always in love with the art in these. It made the ranger look a bit cartoony at times, even goofy, maybe a little crazed, but overall, a very entertaining read. Again, back to the 10-cent and 25-cent sales at World's Greatest Comics. I picked up more from a character I've been reading a good amount of the last year or two. Punisher War Journal 9 through 15. This is Carl Potts writing a lot of one-off types of adventures, a very light continuity. Frank is especially extreme in these issues. I'm not sure if that's Potts in particular, if that's what War Journal was doing as a separate title from the main Punisher story. But these were definitely Frank being Frank and tying in on occasion to other parts of the Marvel U. We've got Black Widow, Bushwhacker, Spider-Man flitting through these issues. And there were a pair of Acts of Vengeance issues, which had cameos from Kingpin and good old Doc Doom. But these were all okay. Nothing groundbreaking or earth-shattering. But they probably weren't going for that. I have some more of these, some more war journals, and I'll probably get to them later in the year. The Spider-Man team-ups are probably the best, with he and the Punisher going up against a neo-Nazi group who ends up taking the staff at the Daily Bugle hostage. Good conversation between the heroes, their different viewpoints, also their commonalities, and some very solid action. My buddy Chris Ouellette from Bizarre Manor spent some time during lockdown doing some household cleaning, including going through his comic book collection. And he sent me some of that stuff, mostly stuff he'd gotten for free over the years, otherwise known as the best kinds of comics. Glad to have you in the hashtag comic book circle of life, Chris. So among those books were Free Comic Book Day 2010 Iron Man and Thor's. A bad guy has stolen some Stark weather-related technology and is using it as a weapon. And Thor is helpless against the unnatural weather. So it's a nice team-up. It's a team-up that makes sense. At least it makes comic book sense. It's a very solid one-off, done in one adventure. So, good work, Matt Fraction, JRJR, and Klaus Janson. Free Comic Book Day 2015, Gronk and the Hero Cats. Two kid-friendly stories, one with a kindly monster, and one with, well, heroic cats. Of the two, my favorite by far was the Hero Cats, but that just may be a personal preference, because, full disclosure here, I have the potential to become one day later in life, and I use this term in a gender-neutral manner, a crazy cat lady. Free Comic Book Day 2016, Dark Horse Comics, featuring in order of appearance, and also pretty much order of preference, Serenity, Hellboy, and Aliens. But the most important single page in this was one that listed all of the Hellboy collections in publication order, which will help me jump into the Mignola verse, which is something I've wanted to do, but without guidance, without a reading order, I didn't know where to start. And I did check. These are all on Hoopla, as are the, and I didn't know these existed either, Hellboy novels. So expect to dive into this sometime this year. And Free Comic Book Day 2019, The Tick. This is one I try to pick up every year, but I didn't remember this story, so I probably missed it. There was a couple who were collectors of Tick and Arthur memorabilia, Tick and Arthur items, mostly, you know, The Tick. And of course, what would be the best possible addition to their collection? The Tick himself, and, you know, sort of Arthur too, whatever. and Free Comic Book Day 2014, Giant Size Thrills, which gave us some stories of Darkon and the Shadow Children. This is from Red Giant Entertainment, and based on the little that I know about them, which is that they published this Free Comic Book Day book once, I doubt that this issue was the marketing success that they had hoped. I don't know whatever became of the line or these titles, but for what they were, they worked. They were both dark in their own ways, and they each had potential. And on a related note, Kirk Spencer sent another free book, Star Wars Halloween Special 2009, a mini-comic that tells a fun and exciting Han and Chewie story. Appropriately, it included a planet of ghosts. It's very good, exciting, with a slight horror tinge. Also from Kirk, I read the trade Destiny, collecting the Marvel Now issues of Wolverines 16 through 20. I wasn't totally in the loop on everything that was happening because, you know, me and the X-Men, but the cast was good and the action was definitely action-packed. The main cast was Sabretooth, Mystique, X-23, who is the X character I'm most interested in for whatever reason, Lady Deathstrike, and Dakin Dakin, mostly battling Mr. Sinister. Charles Soule wrote most of these, and I generally like his writing. I've read a novel of his a few years back, which was quite good. So considering I didn't have much context for these, they worked for me more often than not. And from Hoopla, I read more from a Slice of Life series I've been reading recently, Giant Days 25 through 36. This is a series that follows the lives and times and traumas and dramas of a trio of English college sophomore ladies. And the second year is very dramatic for all involved. The triumvirate is threatened by relationships outside the core, especially romantic ones. And in this, it is really spot on in portraying that type of relationship among people of this age. We also get a younger sister arriving on campus for a visit, and the 10-year-old goth girl speaks truth into a difficult situation, which struck me as a total sitcom maneuver. The big drama at the end of this volume is that the girls have hemmed and hawed and delayed so long that they don't quite know where they're going to live next year and with whom they will live. So again, major drama. And I read a few more trades of a Hoopla series I've been working my way through, The Woods, 21 through 28, written by James Tynan IV. You're welcome, Chris. We've moved firmly out of the phase of figuring out what happened, how the students and faculty got zapped across the universe, and firmly into the phase of them trying to make their best of the situation, working with the existing peoples there, trying to build a civilization, while always revisiting the concept of how they got there, can they get back, and what exactly is happening on Earth in their absence. All the while learning a bit about how technology and science might work on this alien world, and all of that while being teenagers and working at relationship drama, like lots of relationship drama. So you throw in some Golden Age of sci-fi, a little High School Musical, and a little Lord of the Flies. So it's an interesting mix of genres and stories, and of course Tynan is a terrific writer. And also a book that I saw on Hoopla straight out of the 1970s, Richard Dragon, Kung Fu Fighter, 1 through 17, written by Denny O'Neill and drawn by a variety of artists, including a standout issue by Jack the King Kirby. Dragon and his African-American friend Ben work well together, a cross-cultural team of martial arts do-gooders, applying the lessons learned from their O-sensei. Issue 5 stands out because it introduces Lady Shiva as the adversary, although she quickly becomes an ally and sticks around in the series for most of it. Her introduction is not a great story, necessarily, but she's a great character, And as the series went on, her characterization improved. And it's probably not the first time for sure, but I do wonder if it's one of the most dramatic cases of a supporting character completely eclipsing the character in the book that they were introduced in. And the same could be said of Bronze Tiger, also introduced in these series. Because Lady Shiva has been a thing in DC for a number of decades, while Richard Dragon, not so much. Bruce Lee does get a shout-out in one issue, and there was one issue in the middle of the run written by the recently deceased David Anthony Kraft, and I wanted to make sure he got a mention. Overall, this wasn't a bad series, and it did wrap up in a satisfying manner. It's dated for sure. There's no getting around that. But if you can set that aside, these are solid examples of DC Bronze Age books. Again, for better or worse. The collection also included Brave and the Bold 132, in which Richard Dragon teams up with Batman in a story written by Zanny Bob Haney. Decent team up, although they thought they were in a Marvel comic because they started out fighting each other. And the villain they were going up against was a martial artist assassin with the ominous and dangerous name of the Stylist. There were some bonus borrows in May on Hoopla, so selected items that can be borrowed without using up any of the monthly allotment. So I read a few of those that sounded interesting. Marvel Superheroes Adventures 1 through 5. This was a collection that had a lot of Captain Marvel in it, and a good chunk of Spider-Man, Ms. Marvel as well. These are the kid-friendly adventure stories, with Peter in school, facing troubles with supervillains and teachers. Fun reads really hit the mark as kid-friendly, family-friendly comics. Each issue has 2 9-to-10-page stories, and then also 3 or 4 cartoons in the style of Sunday comic strips. And I mean specific comic strips, like Peanuts, Dilbert, Kathy, and others that are all homaged in there. As an example, just think Spidey is Charlie Brown, Carol Danvers is Lucy, and a position in the Avengers is the football. Also, I read Psylords 1 through 8, written by Fred Van Lente. I tend to like Van Lente's writing, and space stories appeal to me, so this should have been right up my alley. And by the end, by the last couple of issues, it started to work for me. But there were a lot of characters and strange situations, and it just took me a while to get into it. So a very, very slow burn, at least for me. But like I said, it more or less came around at the end. And Lady Castle, 1 through 4, wherein the King of Mancastle dies, along with all of the men in the kingdom, save one. And so a non-man becomes, well, not queen, but king, and after changing the name of the kingdom to Lady Castle, she and her knights battle the curse that befell the prior king, and then actually make peace with some of their neighbors and potential rivals. And they sort of live happily ever after. And also, I read Ghost Rider 20 through 25, in which Johnny Blaze is seeking the answer to a question that many people have asked over the centuries. How does a man get to heaven? But he wasn't so much interested in, like, the darkness to light version of that answer. Although, if any of you are interested, I'm willing to have that chat with you. But what Johnny wanted to know was more in terms of, if you have a beef with an angel, and you want to get revenge on said angel, in that sense, how is he going to get to heaven? Because the angel Zadkiel is preparing to take over heaven himself, seeing as how he doesn't like the way it's being run. And the problem that Johnny Blaze finds with some of Zadkiel's strongest agents is that the penance stare doesn't have much effect on a being who has no guilt for their sinful actions. Interesting questions, strange answers, and definitely a dramatic storyline. Now, a lot of people don't know this. It's possible I'm breaking news here. But Paul Hicks has been to Heroes Con. He was even at one that I was at. So we exchanged some items. I gave him something Doom Patrol related, of course. And he gave me the trade, Who Dares Wins, collecting Hitman 23 through 28. Tommy Monahan is trying his best to carry out his hitman duties with honor, while also getting the job done and avoiding the big hit that is heading his way. It's rough and tumble, a little bit bloody, but the dialogue is sharp and the character development quite good. Wasn't sure what to expect from this, not having read any Hitman before, but it was solid. Thank you, Paul. Good on you, mate. And from right off my bookshelf, a Valiant trade that I actually bought myself many, many years ago. You could count the years in decades. And one I wasn't sure if I'd ever actually read, so I went ahead and read Solar, Man of the Atom, Alpha and Omega. These were reprints of a series of 6 to 8 page backups that actually told the origin story of this 1990s version of Solar. Jim Shooter, Bob Layton, Barry Windsor Smith, some real talent was on this title. And even though there are some dated 90s flourishes, the character work and the dialogue still holds together. And overall, solid premise and a very good storyline. Good telling of an origin. And then an Archie Reed from Hoopla, Pep Digital number 4, which was Spring Has Sprung. So perfect reading for this time of year. This one had a lot of gardening, baseball, bike riding, and some excitement over the approaching end of the school year. Very fun read. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite read of the month, the Sherlock Holmes illustrated stories were very fun. There were some bits in the Marvel Superheroes Adventures that were also quite fun. Hero Cats, Free Comic Book Day, was an enjoyable pro-feline read. That Dark Circle take on the Black Hood was rough, but a good read. But in terms of what I thought was my favorite, I hate to spoil an upcoming Doomspeak episode, but Doom and Tony Stark's Errand Boy battling in Camelot, that is a legitimately classic comic book story. Favorite read of May, Iron Man 150. If you have any comments about any of these books, I'd love to hear them. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And, of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.